When same-sex marriage became legal in Iowa, the state became a wedding destination. But some same-sex couples wanted more than just a marriage license. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, I'll talk with couples who have chosen to live in Iowa in their search for marriage equality. We'll meet Donna and Sumitra, who moved here in July after deciding that their chances of ever marrying in their home state of Colorado were slim. Sarah and Jane came here from Boston, where they were already legally married, and Dean and Gary have turned down many opportunities to leave the state so they can maintain their married status. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. On April 3rd, 2009, the Iowa Supreme Court upheld a lower court's ruling in the case of Varnum v. Bryan. That decision made same-sex marriage legal in Iowa, and it turned Iowa into a wedding destination for same-sex couples from all over the world. Today, I'll talk with three couples who didn't just come here to get a marriage license. They've chosen to live in Iowa in their search for marriage equality. Is that your story, too? Tell us your story. You can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also give us a call at 866-780-9100. My first guests today are Donna and Sumitra Redwing of Des Moines. Hello, Donna and Sumitra.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, great. Thank you both for being here today.
Our pleasure.
Yes. And the two of you have been living as a married couple for a very long time. You've been sharing a last name and living together as a married couple for 26 years. But you were living mostly in Colorado during that time, right?
Well, we lived all over the country during that time.
But okay.
The last 12, 13 years, it was in Colorado.
So you had built a life together and at least made the adjustments to the laws where you lived that you had to make. But you were living as a married couple. What made you want to come to Iowa?
Well, I think first I was offered a job here in Iowa. And as we started thinking about moving here, our legislature in Colorado refused to even hear legislation that would allow for a civil union, you know, which is not even marriage. And it was at that point we looked at each other. We always said that, you know, we'd like to get married and grow old together. And I think we grew old together and now we're going to get married. But we looked at Iowa and we thought, okay, let's live in a place and space where who we are and who we get to be is honored and respected. And so we moved to Iowa.
And Donna, you are the executive director of One Iowa. That was the job that pulled you here, right?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
When you considered that job, were you also looking at other places in the country that you might move?
No, we were living on top of a mountain in Colorado. It was a beautiful, beautiful place to be. It really was, for me, the opportunity to work to strengthen marriage equality, but also for Sumitra and I to live in a place where we could get married.
Had you thought about looking for work outside of Colorado and looking for work in one of the places where you could be married before this?
It was always, I think, in the back of our mind. You know, it would be great to be in a place where we could wed.
Sumitra, what did you think about Iowa before moving here?
I said, Iowa? I didn't know much about Iowa. And as soon as I mentioned it to people, it was like I started meeting tons of people who had lived in Iowa and introduced me to what it would be like before I even moved here. So it was kind of nice. And it's been wonderful since I've been here. I can't get over the acceptance. And people are calling Donna my wife already, and we're not even married yet. So that's kind of new to me.
We have, if you look at Iowa history, we have a history of being quite a progressive state, although I don't think that's necessarily our reputation outside of Iowa. Did you have an impression of Iowa as far as our politics go?
Well, I did simply because we knew that that there was marriage equality here. A couple of weeks ago, I was in New York, and I told a friend. He said, "Where are you living now?" And I said, "Iowa." And he looked at me, and he smiled, and he said, "Oh, yeah, the Paris of the Midwest."
When you were living together in Colorado and other places for all those years, really living as a married couple, what were some of the problems that you would run into because you were not legally married?
I think for me, this is Donna, for me, it was cultural. People would assume that we were sisters or best friends. You always had to take the temperature of the room. Could you hold hands? Could I, you know, brush the snow off her jacket? I mean, just little things that married couples, couples who are accepted, little things that people get to do for same-gender couples outside of places like Iowa. You're always gauging whether or not you're safe. Mm-hmm. And Sumitra, would you agree here? We're accepted even by people who are conflicted about marriage.
Right. Yeah.
Can you give me an example of how you've felt that since you've been in Iowa?
The TV. When we bought our TV and the fellow, we're looking at different TVs and the fellow at the store said, "Oh, that's the one your wife was looking at."
Yeah, people just assume. Even at work, I didn't really come out to anybody yet, but I told someone I am here with my partner. And when I told them, you know, Donna, they automatically started referring to her as my wife, which for me was, I'm not used to that. So it's really wonderful. So now I'm really excited to get married.
Yeah. I mean, the shift is seismic. You know, yeah. We can feel it. We can feel it.
Even to kiss goodbye in the driveway, you know, and even though we were living in the mountains, we didn't do that. But here we do. The atmosphere is totally different, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. And we should say we've always been out. We've always been advocates for equality. We've never been closeted. But here in Iowa, and maybe it's a combination of marriage equality and Iowa nice. I'm not sure. Yeah. But here in Iowa, it feels so different and so liberating.
So you are planning on getting married. When is that going to happen?
September 21st of next year. You
know,
this year. Oh my gosh, I had to pop the question, right? After 26 years.
were you nervous about that?
Well, a little, because what if she had said no? Oh my God.
What kind of ceremony are you planning?
Well, we're Buddhist, but our dear, dear friend is a Southern Baptist minister. Reverend Dr. C. Welton Gaddy. He's head of Interfaith Alliance in Washington, D.C. He's going to come up and marry us.
And you have clearly already committed your lives to each other. Did you have a ceremony at some point along the way?
No. We weren't going to do it because, you know, why? Why?
So this ceremony, which for so many people comes at the beginning of their lives together, and is emblematic of the commitment that people make to each other. What will it mean to you?
You know, I think of this every day, and I'm thinking, well, how is my life going to change? But the feeling is so different. I don't know. I feel like I'm not going anywhere, and I'm staying in this relationship, and I truly, it has made me look back at the last 26 years and realize how much I love her.
Oh.
We're crying. If you can't tell.
I can tell. Donna, if you can tell me, what do you think it will mean to you?
Well, all of that. I mean, Sumitra, you know, we pledged our lives together 26 years ago and never looked back. But there's also, and I hate to be pragmatic, but there are some really pragmatic things about marriage. You know, here in Iowa, we will be legally married. We will be treated as a married couple in all things that the state is concerned about. And if we're not, you know, we'll raise a little hell. and then we, of course, look toward federal recognition. You know, because this year, when we do our taxes, we'll be able to file as a married couple in Iowa but we'll have to file as individuals with the Internal Revenue Service. And so there's all kinds of things. I think Dean, who you're going to talk to later, will know it's like 1,486 things that, even though we're married in Iowa, they're not part of our rights federally. So,
you, Sumitra, I know that you're nearing retirement age, and you clearly are both in the prime of life right now, but you probably think about that. Do you think about what it means as you grow older to be able to be legally married?
Well, I do now. I mean, it's something I've never thought about before, because I didn't think it would ever happen for us. And so now it's, yeah, every day little things happen, and you start thinking about all these different things. So it's opening my eyes and becoming more aware, you know.
Have you seen friends who have been in long-term committed relationships run into problems later in life as maybe they didn't have hospital visitation rights or had legal problems in passing on property?
Yes. Oh, yes. It's sad. People have lost their homes. They've, you know, lost everything in their home. And it's, I mean, I can't believe these things would happen. I can't believe families who appeared to be accepting suddenly would just turn against, you know, their partner. So it's pretty sad to have that happen.
And not to have those protections. We had a couple who were friends of ours, and one of them passed away. She got very, very sick, and the hospital would not allow her life partner of, 15 years to be with her because she didn't have her paperwork, you know, that allowed her power of attorney with her. And so her partner died alone. When they went to the funeral parlor would not make the arrangements without going back to the ex-husband of 18 years ago to make the arrangements. Yeah. And even the burial couldn't happen without his say-so. So when we talk about those kinds of, you know, pragmatic things, imagine your partner dying alone because you didn't carry that legal paperwork. Imagine going back to an ex-husband or an ex-wife of, you know, decades ago to get permission to have the funeral and inter the body. Those are the kinds of things that same-gender couples have faced forever. And here in Iowa, we will not have to do that.
Well, Donna and Sumitra, thank you both for talking with me today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your engagement.
Thank you so much.
Donna and Sumitra Redwing of Des Moines, they moved to Iowa in July, partially in their search for marriage equality, although they've been together living as a married couple now for 26 years. Today, I'm talking to same-sex couples who have chosen to live in Iowa because of marriage equality in this state. If that's your story as well, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, I'm talking with same-sex couples who have chosen to live in Iowa because of marriage equality in the state. Same-sex marriage, of course, became legal in Iowa in April of 2009. If that's your story as well, if marriage equality in Iowa has influenced your decision to come here or to stay here, let us know. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My next guests today are Sarah Goplin and Jane Erickson of Des Moines. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you both so much for being here. And you moved to Iowa a couple of years ago in January of 2010. So that was not long after same-sex marriage became a possibility in the state. But you came here from Massachusetts, which of course is one of the few places where they had marriage equality before it became law in Iowa. Sarah, let's start with you. Why were you thinking about leaving Massachusetts?
I had been in Massachusetts for about 11 years, and Jane had been there a little bit longer. And we had been we'd been living in the Boston area and had been looking at places that had a slightly lower cost of living for us to move to, but had been looking primarily in Massachusetts and around that area. After our son was born in 2008, we wanted to be closer to our families, and most of my family is here in Minnesota, and Jane has family in Iowa. So we wanted to, you know, ideally be close to them with a small child, but really didn't want to give up the marriage that we had fought really hard for in Massachusetts, and we had been married there in 2004. So when Iowa changed their law in 2009, we saw an opportunity to live in a place that had the lower cost of living, was close to our families, and we could keep the marriage that we had worked really hard to achieve.
So, Jane, did you grow up in Iowa?
No, I did not. I actually grew up in South Carolina, but I've had some family here for the past, I don't know, 12 or 15 years or so. Iowa was new to me, definitely, but I do have family here, and that was a big reason for wanting to be able to, you know, I wanted to be close to them, and we wanted to be close to Sarah's family in Minnesota as well.
So you knew some things about the Midwest, obviously, before moving here. And Sarah, did you grow up in Minnesota?
I did. Yeah, for the most part. We had lived a little bit all over when I was younger. But for the most part, I grew up in Minnesota, and pretty much my entire extended family is in Minnesota. So this is a really familiar landscape and culture for me.
Sure. And I was going to ask you, before that decision was made in April of 2009, and I'd love for both of you to tell me, what were your impressions of Iowa before that?
Well, I had grown up in Minnesota, so, you know, there's a little Minnesota, Iowa.
Yes, I know you think we're dumb.
Not at all. But I hadn't actually been to Iowa very much. I had a couple cousins who had lived here, and an aunt and an uncle, and so had been through the state. But I really didn't have much of an impression of Iowa, just that it was really similar to the southern Minnesota landscape and culture that I was already familiar with. But I think Jane probably had a different impression.
What was your impression, Jane?
I don't know. I knew it was a very rural state. And, you know, I thought of it as a more conservative place. And I think that was, you know, I wasn't sure a whole lot. I didn't know much more about it. I mean, I had been here to visit and just knew that it took a long time to get from one place to another when I would fly into the airport or whatever and go visit family. And so I guess that's...
You just thought of the wide open places.
Yeah, very, very rural and open state.
When you were looking to move to Iowa, you had to make some concessions as far as what you were doing, particularly you, Jane, right? Because you were working with homeless people in Boston, which we do have homeless people here, obviously, but not as many.
Right. Yeah, it was a big change. I mean, I was ready to, you know, for some kind of change, but... yeah, my work had been in urban homelessness, and so that certainly didn't really fit here. But I had started a master's program part-time in Boston, and I was able to come here and just go full-time and finish. And, you know, I was interested in getting into public policy work and doing something a little different. And I've been able to do that. You know, I've been able to find work that allows me to do some... be a little bit involved with policy, and the work I had done in Boston was specifically with homeless elders, and so I'm still, you know, working in the aging network, and I also am able to keep a little bit of the housing piece in my current job as well. So
you're the director of monitoring and compliance with the Iowa Department of Aging?
That's right, yes. And I work with the Department on Aging, and then I also work with them on any housing issues that come along.
And Sarah, I know that you are a musician and you play with the Des Moines Symphony. You also play with the Central Iowa Symphony, and you teach private lessons as well in Ames. Why do the two of you live in Ames as opposed to Des Moines?
Well, initially, when we came, like Jane was saying, she had started a master's program, and when she transferred, the school that ended up that we ended up coming to was Iowa State. So we ended up coming to Ames for her to finish her degree in Iowa State. So we landed in Ames, and it may make more sense for us to be in Des Moines. I'm not sure, but we've been in Ames now for almost 3 years. Well, 3 years exactly. Yeah.
Well, and the last couple that I spoke to, they moved to Des Moines, and I have lived in Ames myself, and I'm a huge fan of Ames, but it is a smaller town, mm-hmm. and some people would call it a more conservative town in some ways, well, particularly if you compare it to, say, Iowa City.
Right.
Although a large university community, it can be quite cosmopolitan. Have you run into any problems living in Ames?
Not for the most part. When we first moved here, we were in student housing for the first year that we lived here, because we didn't, you know, renting a house or buying a house sight unseen, we weren't sure what to do. So we went ahead and lived in student housing for the first year, and we, for the most part, were really accepted and met really wonderful people there. But we did have one incident of harassment at our apartment, which was a little bit frustrating, and we're not quite sure exactly what that stemmed from, and we don't know exactly who did it, although we have a pretty good idea of what was happening. But other than that, I think we've been really accepted. Everyone that we've met has been really wonderful and really, really open. And what your last guest was saying was true. I think most people will catch themselves if they, you know, I'll meet someone on the playground, for example, with my son, and they'll ask what my husband does, and I'll say, oh, actually, well, my wife is, you know, blah, 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 and they, oh, I'm sorry, and then we just move on from there, and it's really been quite an open and really accepting place to be.
And your son was born, he's 4.5 years old, he was born when you lived in Massachusetts.
That's
in,
right.
In Boston. Was the fact that you have a child together, was that a large part of why it was so important for you to find another place with marriage equality?
Absolutely, yeah. that was definitely important. Sarah carried Silas and had Silas, and, you know, I was there through the whole thing. And because we were married in Massachusetts, both of our names were on the birth certificate, and I was a full-on parent in Massachusetts, but, you know, if we crossed state lines, I wasn't a parent anymore.
Right.
So we had gone through the federal adoption process so that I would be a parent wherever I was. But I just, you know, I wanted that extra security. I wanted to be somewhere where it wouldn't be questioned. I didn't want to have to go rifling around for adoption papers if our son ended up in the hospital or something. You know, I wanted to be a fully recognized parent wherever I was. So I think for me, that was a huge part of needing to be in a state where marriage was recognized.
Your son isn't in school yet. He's
no,
still
yeah.
too young for kindergarten. Do you think about what that will be like for him to go to school and have two moms? And have you thought about him going to school in Ames?
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's in preschool right now, so he's already encountered a lot of other kids, and it's been a non-issue with kids so far. Kids just kind of say, "Oh, you don't have a mom and a dad; you have two moms," and they move on, and that's the end of the story. But we were fortunate enough to meet really great people. There's quite a few other same-sex couples in Ames that have children in the school system right now. And so we've talked to them about what it's like for their kids. And I think for the most part, students who are younger don't really care. They don't really care. They, you know, I think they care more about if you're sharing or if you're, if you're mean to them in the playground rather than, what your home situation is. But I think We've talked to a number of people, and I think we're prepared for some questions. I think we're prepared for him discovering that his family isn't as usual as he thinks it is. He takes his family for granted, obviously, and so I think, you know, we're starting to think about those conversations. But he knows that most people have a mom and a dad, and he doesn't, and it doesn't appear to to bother him at all. And yeah, we'll see how that goes as he gets older.
You moved here in January of 2010, so the spring before is when same-sex marriage became legal in Iowa. You've been through now a couple of election cycles in Iowa, and in that first election cycle you were here for, Supreme Court justices who were sitting on the court when that decision was made were voted out.
Right.
How did you feel when you watched that happen?
Well, it was really frustrating. It was really frustrating. I felt like Jane and I had worked in Massachusetts in 2004 when the marriage decision happened in, happened there. There was a really huge education project that had to happen to let the people of the state know what the role of the Supreme Court was at that point, and that they weren't making a law, that they were interpreting the Constitution as it stood, and that the voice of the people is heard through the legislative process, but that the Supreme Court is kind of a check against the Constitution, a check against the legislature, you know, based on the Constitution. So, so it was frustrating to come to have to sort of to feel like we were starting that process over, coming to Iowa and feeling like, okay, now, you know, now it's sort of our job to help people understand what the role of the Supreme Court is, that they're not making law, that they're interpreting the Constitution. This is what applies to everyone.
Have you become politically active in Iowa?
I think so. Yeah, we were we did some door knocking and campaigning and Jane, as part of her education, as part of her master's program, was working a little bit with politics.
Yeah. I was able to intern in the legislature actually when the marriage amendment came up in
January of 2011.
I guess it was. Yeah.
So you have sort of looked full on in the face to the possibility that this right could be taken away from you in this state. That must be very frightening to think about.
It is. It's frightening. It feels to us, or at least to me, it feels settled. I mean, this summer will be our 9th wedding anniversary, and I'm sure there are, you know, there's tons of people who've been together longer than that, your previous guests, for example. But I mean, 9 years feels, it's basically a decade. It feels like it's been settled, and it's hard to think about people still having a problem with this a decade later. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've been together almost 13 years,
13,
I suppose,
14 years,
but actually married for 9, so it does feel a little weird that this is still, I mean, it's still such an issue.
But one of the experiences that we had in Massachusetts was that people who were trying, the legislature, or the portion of the legislature that was trying to amend the Constitution to ban same-sex marriage in Massachusetts, I mean, that movement kind of fizzled out as time went on. People got really accustomed to having marriage equality. The sky didn't fall down. Nothing terrible happened. Just more people were able to get married and protect their families. And so as time went on, there was less and less enthusiasm for trying to reverse the law. And I think you see that in Iowa even now. I mean, this year at this last past election cycle, that the justice who was up for his retention vote was retained. I think that if you look nationwide at the marriage equality victories that happened in Maine and Maryland and Washington and even in Minnesota, I think the tide is turning a little bit in public opinion, and I'm pretty confident that our marriage will stay legal.
It also gives you more opportunities if you wanted to go elsewhere. There
right.
are other places you can go now and still be legally married. Does Iowa feel like home?
Well, I think it feels like home maybe more than it did 3 years ago, because we've been here for a little bit. I mean, I think that
yeah, we've got a little more community here now and that sort of thing. I mean, I don't think anything's set in stone for us right now as far as, you know, if our options opened up, I'm not sure what we would do. But you know, we've become comfortable here and have really met some great people that have made it feel like home to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, of course, a lot of us feel like Iowa is something of a paradise on earth. At least we like to say that. But when you look around you, we have marriage equality in this state, But mm-hmm. does it feel to you as accepting as, say, Boston was?
I think that people have been very tolerant, and I think there may be more people here who aren't necessarily fully comfortable with the idea of marriage, but I think people are polite and reserved in their response
right.
to us.
Right. So, I think the culture is different. I think in Boston, if someone has a problem with you, they let you know pretty clearly and pretty upfront. And so you just, you know, you deal with that as it happens. But in Iowa, I think the culture is people are a little more reserved and a little more polite, even if they don't necessarily agree with you. So I think that people have been very kind to us and very, very polite to us and very accepting. And I think the people who disagree with our marriage or feel that you know, marriage equality is not something that they can handle, don't continue a relationship with us. But I felt it very accepting. You know, it's just a completely different culture
and a different place
to live.
Well, Sarah and Jane, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great being here.
Sarah Goplin and Jane Erickson of Ames. Today on Talk of Iowa, I'm talking with same-sex couples who have chosen to make their lives in Iowa because of marriage equality in this state. If that's your story as well, we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, I'm talking with same-sex couples who have decided to make their lives in Iowa because of marriage equality. Since same-sex marriage became legal in Iowa in 2009, many couples from around the world have traveled here to get married. My next guests have chosen to stay in Iowa because they could be legally wed here. They've had a number of opportunities to leave. With me now are Dean Gent and Gary Swenson. Hello, Dean.
Hello.
And hello, Gary.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you both for being here today. And you live in Mason City. You moved to Iowa in 2003. What brought you here?
I came here originally. I had just gotten out of the military, and I'm a radiologist by profession. And at the time, there were jobs available all over the nation. The Iowa job was the right job for me, and I landed here and have worked with the radiologists of North Iowa for the past 10 years.
How long had the two of you been together before you moved to Iowa?
We actually weren't together when we moved to Iowa. Both of us followed society's pathway for the gay American male, and we had actually married and had families of our own, three children apiece. And we didn't get together until after I had moved to Iowa. In fact, when I made the decision that I needed to live an authentic life, I basically told my business partners that, sorry, guys, I'm getting a divorce and I'm moving. And I didn't tell them why, because I didn't think that Mason City was ready for a same-sex committed couple. And we actually took a job in Ohio. Bought a house down there, and one of my business partners cornered me and said, "Now, wait a minute, why are you moving?" And he pressed and pressed, and finally the truth came out that I was going to be establishing a same-sex relationship with Dean, and he looked at me and he said, "Well, I've got two things to say about that. Number one, if you think it matters, it doesn't. And number two, now, why are you moving?" And I got that same response from the seven other partners, and we had a heart-to-heart one night and said, "Boy, we are moving to Ohio for the sole purpose of running away." And we didn't go through all this this pain and turmoil just to run away, so we decided to make Mason City our home. The irony of that is that had we moved to Ohio, we'd be in Ohio today saying, "Man, if we'd have stayed in Iowa, we could be married right now."
Was Mason City ready for a committed same-sex couple?
Well, this is Dean, and it certainly appears that has always appeared that way to us. We immediately found a very welcoming and embracing church family at First Presbyterian Church in Mason City, who, by the way, also now hosts our PFLAG meetings there monthly.
And but, for people who don't know what PFLAG is?
PFLAG is Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. Okay. It's a national organization. So the community at the church and embraced us and welcomed us openly. And in fact, in the fall of 2004, agreed to have a Holy Union ceremony for us at that time.
So you actually had a ceremony well before it was legal to wed in Iowa.
Yes, exactly.
And you mentioned, Gary, before that both of you had been married previously and you both are fathers.
That is correct.
And you had to come out to your families. How did that go?
That was a very difficult process for both of us. Our family traditions, I grew up Mormon. Dean grew up in kind of evangelical Christianity. And we did a really good job of raising our children in that tradition. And so there was a lot of initial resistance. It's not news that is received happily by individuals in those communities. And we only made the decision to live authentically when we realized that the damage we would cause by continuing to live the lie would actually be greater than the damage caused by ending our marriages and starting a life together. But time has healed most of the wounds, and I think that one thing about being married is exemplary of that. My parents had their 60th wedding anniversary recently, and up until the time we were legally married, we were always simply referred to as either partners or, you know, it was Gary and Dean. I don't think the family had any concept of any long-term relationship, even though we've now been together for 10 years. But once we had our legal wedding ceremony, my mother started introducing Dean as her son-in-law to friends and relatives who came to the anniversary celebration. And that was a first for a very, very staunch traditional Mormon woman to introduce her same-sex son-in-law or son-in-law in a same-sex marriage to her friends and close relations.
What did that feel like when that happened?
Oh, my gosh. For me, Dean, it was just amazing because it was that final recognition from the family members closest and dearest to you that they now understand and recognize that this is a regular marriage like any other heterosexual couple has. And so it really felt like the final piece of the puzzle being put in place for family to all of a sudden, because Iowa had done what it had done to allow legal marriage, everybody understands what marriage means. You know, nobody goes to a restaurant with their loved one and says, would you civil union me or would you domestic partnership me? Everybody understands what marriage is and what that means. And so our friends and neighbors in Mason City, when we got married, they came and attended our wedding. We had over 400 people attend our wedding ceremony at the Music Man Square in Mason City, Iowa on May 31st, 2009.
Well, in May 31st, so same-sex marriage had not been legal long, and you must have gotten the invitations out right away you had 400 people.
I was
people.
First in line at the recorder's office to get our marriage license.
Wow. So on April 9th?
Yeah, the first day of marriage licenses were issued.
You had had your commitment ceremony, you mentioned, in 2004. And so clearly, again, you had made that commitment to each other to spend your lives together.
Yes.
What was different about the marriage ceremony?
This is very interesting. This is Gary speaking. I was totally unprepared for the feeling that I would have after the civil marriage ceremony in 2009, because I really felt that the religious ceremony was indeed our wedding, our marriage. And yet after we had been married in 2009, this flood of emotion came over me, and suddenly I realized that I was considered fully human by the state of Iowa. And there's nothing, no way to describe that feeling of the change in the sense of self-worth that I had after that ceremony that wasn't there when we had the religious ceremony. That was a marvelous event, but this validation by the state of Iowa that I was fully human, I could participate in all of the events and responsibilities, but also all of the advantages of a married individual here in the state of Iowa, that it was overwhelming, and I was totally unprepared for that feeling.
That's so fascinating to hear, because when we talk about this, we talk about it as a civil right, as a legal thing, but it actually changed how you felt about yourself?
It really did. It was a unique sense of, like, as I said, validation that at least here in the state of Iowa, I am considered a full part of humanity. And it is an interesting thing. Living in Mason City, we go up to the Twin Cities often. And every time we cross that state line, we look at each other and we say, well, now we're divorced. And every time we return back across the Iowa state line heading south, we look at each other and we say, congratulations, we're married again. It is a unique and real sensation of violence that occurs as we go into a non-marriage state and realize that that aspect of being considered fully human, fully part of the human family, is no longer present.
So it sounds like a joke, but it's not a joke.
Oh, no, not at all. It's become an endearing statement that we say to each other that we can laugh about, but it is a real thing. If we were to get into a car accident on the Minnesota side of the border, our rights and privileges would be very different than if we were to get into a car accident on the southern side of the border in Iowa. And that is a very real feeling as you're driving along snowy roads in January or February.
So getting married for you changed how you felt about yourself. Did it change how you felt about your relationship?
I would say not really, because we've always had that deeply committed forever concept of our relationship. And so I guess I should say that it really didn't change the commitment that I had to Dean, but it did change the way that I guess I hold my head in public as we go out together.
Yeah, I think it's a strange combination of the internal validation that you feel as an individual by the society to be able to have legal marriage, but it's also somewhat external because now there's this acceptance and awareness by everybody in your community that you are a legally validated married couple.
Dean, did it change how you felt about yourself too? Did you have a similar experience to Gary?
I did. It was really kind of a unison thing for both of us. There was just this flood of, oh my gosh, now I think Donna Redwing earlier in the program referenced the fact that now you have this sudden realization that there's over 1,000 laws federally that you want to participate in. And that's why now that we have all the rights that come with civil marriage in Iowa, we want those same things federally.
You mentioned, was it Gary's mom?
Yes.
Okay. So when you got that marriage license, that changed how your mom viewed your relationship. Did you also find that there was a change in how other people treated the two of you, just having that piece of paper?
I would say that yes and no. The very, very close people who were already accepting of us, I don't think it changed how they approached us. I think the people that it really changed were the fence sitters, those who were a bit ambivalent as to how they felt about this issue. And they were the ones who needed that little bit of legislative nudge, shall we say, or validation from the law that would allow them to say, well, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. You know, the state of Iowa says they're married, so I guess he must be my son-in-law because, you know, it's son-in-law. And the word law there, I think, has very significant meaning for many of these people. But the ambivalent ones, really, it does make a difference for.
Having something to call you, I'm sure, in some ways, was helpful to your mother, to something to call Dean, you know, a term that she had that was not refutable in some ways. But did it also, do you think, did it change how she felt about Dean and about your relationship?
I do believe that she really believed that it was a temporary relationship until the civil wedding took place. And at that point, she realized, again, as has been brought up earlier on the show, people understand what the word marriage means. And so they understand what that commitment means. They understand what the long-term intentions of the individuals who get married are. They don't understand what the long-term intentions of people who just live together are.
When I'm shopping, I will be buying something for the house, and I may have a sales clerk that says, oh, your wife will love that wreath you're taking home. And I say, well, I have a husband, but he'll smile and he'll love it when I get home. And so I think it's a continual education process for people around Iowa to learn the terminology. And the longer we go, the more people do understand. And I think Sarah and Jane said earlier, you know, they talked about, you know, my wife on the playground, and the people go, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize, you know, that you're in a same-sex marriage. And so once people realize that and they learn more of the terminology, it really begins to make a big difference. And I'm on the board of One Iowa down in Des Moines, our statewide equality organization, and serve with the board there and Donna Redwing. And I think one of the things we feel is important going forward is that we continue this education process for people to understand the importance of marriage in the state of Iowa being an add-on rather than a takeaway. We're including more people in this big tent of marriage that everybody understands and knows what that means and what that's all about. And same-sex couples getting married does nothing to take away from that institution of marriage.
Outside of that legal right to wed, do you feel like you are treated justly and equally in Iowa?
We have nothing but good to say about the people of Iowa. Those who have disagreed with our relationship have been politely quiet. The vast majority of people in Mason City whom we encounter are positive, are friendly, and we have encountered no negative situations with people regarding our relationship. I think the term Iowa nice really is a real term, and those who disagree are kind enough to just be quiet about their disagreement.
Well, Dean and Gary, thank you both so much for talking with us today.
It's been our pleasure.
Thank you.
Dean Gent and Gary Swenson of Mason City, Iowa. This hour I've been talking to same-sex couples who have chosen to live in Iowa because of marriage equality. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Alyssa Weiss in Ames. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. We also had technical support from John Pemble in Des Moines today. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, will be here with some New Year's resolutions for you to make on behalf of your home. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.